This is the Alien UFO Podcast, episode 131, and I'm your host, Simon Bowne. My mission here at the Alien UFO Podcast is to investigate all things that are part of the wider UFO phenomena. I'm looking at UFO sightings, alien abduction, historic cases and other related events. And you can enjoy the extended version of this episode ad-free, along with over 120 hours of extended episodes on Patreon. And if you enjoy this podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe. This week I'm talking to Joseph Stillwell about his book, Into the Blue, of Wanderers, Invisible Children and Astral Voyages. Joseph has experienced intense high-strangeness ET encounters, and in this episode we talk of only two of them. Hi Joe, thanks a lot for coming on the podcast.
It's great to be here, Simon. I'm so glad that you invited me for this. This is a topic that I think is important, and the more exposure, the better. So thank you again.
So we're going to talk about your book. It's called Into the Blue, of Wanderers, Invisible Children and Astral Voyages. Before we get onto your experiences, you mentioned in the book that your father talked about seeing Foo Fighters.
Yes, that's correct. My father was a naval aviator. He joined the Navy and became a pilot directly out of high school. He fought, he was in the Navy as an aviator for 10 years. He fought primarily in the Korean War.
And it was when he saw the Foo Fighters when he was flying the military aircraft.
That's correct. He flew off of aircraft carriers. He was never land-based. He shared with me that over quite a long period, many different instances, when he and his squadron, or just he and his wingman, were in the air. They always only flew at night. They were known as night raiders or night fighters. He shared with me that on several occasions, bright lights would appear near their airplanes. The numbers varied, the distances from their aircraft varied, and they would appear. They would track the aircraft for a while, always staying right next to the planes, regardless of the maneuvers that were made. And then eventually they would just disappear, just vanish. He was never able to identify any of these things, but it's my understanding that during the war, sightings of this type were quite common.
It's like they were watching us or something, just checking up on what's going on, if they were intelligently controlled.
He indicated that, yes, the plane that he was in, as well as the others, regardless of any evasive maneuvers or standard maneuvers that they would make with their aircraft during the periods when these lights were with them, the lights would make the same maneuvers and stay right with them.
So if we can get on to your experiences, I wanted to first of all ask you about what happened on March the 1st, 2011, when you saw a rectangular object over your house.
On March 1st, 2011, in the early hours of that morning, I had awakened and used the bathroom, and I had come back to my room and walked to one of the windows in my room that faces to the west. And I went to the window just so I could look out. I wanted to see if I could see the Orion constellation. And at that time of year, looking out of this particular window, I would have to look up to the left to see that constellation. And I did. And I caught sight of the constellation as well as the moon. But I had just barely set my sight, those two objects, when I sensed movement in the sky to the right, outside of my window. So I turned my head and looked to the right, and there was just an enormous structure coming in very slowly from the west heading toward, it appeared to be heading toward the back of my house. It would have been coming parallel to the rear of my house. When I initially caught sight of it, I'm going to guess it was maybe about 500 feet away, maybe about 300 feet in altitude. And it was shaped like a brick. I had never seen or heard of anything like this structure in my life. So I just watched, just in amazement. It was moving very, very slowly, maybe 10 miles an hour. It could have been even slower. It did not seem to have any source, external source, or telltale signs of a propulsion. And it was just moving very slowly toward me. It was solid black. The three surfaces that I could see, the side that was facing to my left or facing to the south, the underside of it, and the end that was facing me. Those three surfaces were solid, seamless, no windows or doors, no markings on the surface, non-reflective, and it just appeared to be as smooth as glass. It was just magnificent.
And you say in the book, I think, that it was, what, four times larger than your house?
Yes. As it got, I initially could not tell the size of this thing because the night was crystal clear. There was not a breath of wind, and the altitude was such that there was nothing close to it where I could get a reference for its size. So it was descending slowly. Eventually, it came over a tree and a home that is that neighbors my property. And once it was low enough, I could then tell how enormous this thing was. I live in a two-story house. It's about 2,500 square feet. Once this thing started going behind the house, I had my head pressed up against the window so I could watch this thing as long as I possibly could. As it moved behind my house, I could then compare it to the size of my house and the size of the neighbor's house. And it was at least four times the size of my house. It was absolutely enormous.
And were you scared?
No. When I first caught sight of it, I was just mesmerized by the beauty of this thing. The lower perimeter, the bottom of the craft, was encircled with red and green lights, every other one being red or green. They were very large. They were shaped like footballs, and they ran around the entire perimeter of the underside of this thing. And there were four equally spaced points that were dark. They were not lit. Those four darkened areas circled the bottom of the craft. So the lights were apparently going on and off, allowing these darkened areas to rotate around the bottom of the craft, around the perimeter. It reminded me of an old theater marquee where the lights blink on and off in sequence. So it looks like, you know, they're traveling around the marquee. It was just such an amazing, beautiful sight that my only sensation was awe at just the magnificence of what I was able to see and eventually see quite close up.
If you look back on it, does it seem odd that it had lights? Because it seems like it was black and it's perfectly capable of moving through the sky, but it had all these lights on it. It was almost like it wanted to be seen, or that it wanted you to see it. Could that be what they were doing?
It could be. We could speculate all day on why and what the purpose was of all of those lights. There were just so many of them. I have to think that they were integral in some function of this structure, because it could have just as easily, as you say, have been dark, or just had one or two lights, as we would imagine a typical airplane, just navigation lights. But this was, there were hundreds of these lights around the bottom of this. So I have to think that they played some important role in the function of this thing.
So then did you, as it ran over the house out of sight, did you think, right, I've got to run through to another room so I can get another view of it as it carries on?
That is exactly what I thought. I watched out of the window of my room that faces the west until the craft completely disappeared behind the house. I turned with the intent of walking across the hallway to the bedroom that's on the other side to look out that window to watch this thing fly away. I only managed to get one step away from the window. I turned, I made one step, I stopped. I hadn't wanted or tried to stop. I just stopped, was completely paralyzed, standing upright. My eyes were still open. I could still see facing straight ahead of me. I couldn't move my eyes, nor could I move any part of my body.
Was that a scary experience?
It was not, strangely. It was not. I had never had anything like that happen to me in my life. I was aware that I was paralyzed. I was mentally talking to myself, and I was just saying mentally, move, just go ahead, get to the other side. You're going to miss this thing flying away, which obviously that is not what I should have been thinking at the time. My natural thought should have been fear that I was paralyzed, and I guess curiosity at why and what happened, and that this must be some kind of medical emergency. But that was not what was going through my mind. I was just telling myself mentally to get going, to try to move, to go see this thing fly away.
Being paralyzed like that, I think I find it quite scary. And also seeing that craft that big so close to the house coming over, and you seem fine with that. Do you ever think that maybe, speculating again, but whoever was occupying that craft was in some way telepathically affecting your response because they didn't want you to freak out or something?
I don't know if it was telepathic control, but I believe that you're right. There was some force that was emitted either from the craft or from whatever might be inside of it that paralyzed me. I believe that is absolutely true. There was a force from the craft, either beings that may have been in it, controlling it, or from the craft itself. I also think that was what was responsible for my unusual mental response. Something obviously had been done to me instantly, not only to paralyze me, but to remove or alter my emotion so that I wouldn't be fearful or resistant to what was happening.
So it was then that something odd and I suppose really quite unexpected happened when you tried to move.
I don't know how long I was in that paralyzed position standing near my window. I don't think it was very long, but standing there mentally trying to get myself to move, I suddenly started to come out of my body through my face. I call it my awareness. My awareness moved forward through my face, but I only got partially out, and it seemed that I got stuck. And I could feel on either side of my head, near my temples, that I was tugging. My awareness was tugging, trying to pull free. And eventually, after several tugs, I did. I broke free and I came out of my body through my face.
Do you feel that that's what they wanted you to do? Or it could be just a byproduct?
I believe that action was controlled, again, either by some force from the craft or the occupants therein. And I believe there were occupants in the craft. If you'd like me to speculate, I can. My opinion will be no more truthful than anyone else's. Would you like me to tell you what I think happened?
Yeah, I think you're the best qualified person to speculate on it.
Okay. So I came out of myself, or my awareness came out of my body. And of course, once out, I no longer have eyes. I no longer have vision. But I was awake and aware when this occurred. And I remember recognizing that I was out of my body. And there were only two realizations during that period. The first was comfort. The balance of everything was absolute perfection. I have never felt that level of comfort ever. The second realization was this vast, just this vastness, endlessness of nothing. It just seemed to go on and on and on. I believe, here is a speculative part, I believe that my awareness, whatever that was, but my awareness was purposely removed from my body. And I believe something was altered before I regained attachment to my body, because it didn't seem like much time went by. I was back in my body and I was moving forward. However, instead of going out the door to the room across the hallway, which was my original intent, I just took a couple of steps and turned left and went down the right side of the bed and sat down on the edge of the bed. That was not something that I intended to do, nor did I want to do that. So it's my belief, and this is speculation, that when my awareness was out of my body, something was altered so that when it was back in, I no longer had control over my physical movement. I was back in my body, but I didn't have control, even though I was having conscious thoughts to do certain movements. My body was not responding. It was doing its own thing.
Wasn't there a message in your mind that, like, it was telepathic? They said something like, "They're at the window, don't look."
That is correct. I was sitting on the edge of the bed, well back, with the backs of my lower legs were against the side of the bed. And almost immediately, once I was seated on the bed, I was just overwhelmed with exhaustion. There was a point of heat, just searing heat, that kind of burst in the center of my chest. It radiated laterally and up and down through my torso, just incredibly hot. It was just an instant of that. But when that struck me, I lost virtually all strength and energy, and I slumped forward. I caught myself with my forearms, making contact with my upper thighs, and stopped my fall forward, but my head kind of drooped and I was now just sitting on the edge of the bed, drooped forward. I don't know how long I was in that position. I don't think it was very long at all, but I was almost completely disabled. The room just filled with brilliant white light. It seemed to be coming through the window, which was just to my left. This is the window that faces the backyard of my house. This window faces north. And when that light filled the room, I lost what little bit of energy or life force that I had left, and I fell further forward. My torso went down against my legs, and my head went down between my knees, and my eyes were still open, and I still had the ability to realize what I was looking at now was the floor and these very dark shadows that were being cast by my lower legs. In that position, I felt as if my skeleton had been removed. I felt like just liquid. It was a very odd feeling. I felt like I was just made of water. And I thought I was just going to cascade down over the edge of the bed and then onto the floor in a puddle. And at that instant, I had a thought. I don't believe it was a thought that originated in my mind. I believe it was, I call it in my book, psychic guidance. More commonly, it would be called telepathy. But it was not a thought that I would have at that moment. And the thought was, they are at the window. Don't look.
So do you feel that things happened that night that you don't remember and that maybe they removed the memory of whatever it was that happened?
I believe, yes, I agree. I believe in this type of an encounter that my ability, as I said earlier, to resist or make my own decisions or have fear, I believe all of those things were somehow removed, where I would be compliant, where I wouldn't experience fear or pain, and I was just at the whim of whatever force at that moment was controlling me.
So that was 2011, but up to that point, had you had any other experiences like this? Because I think there was the one in 1969 on the Sierra Highway. But did you have suggestions or glimpses or stuff that was suspicious over time?
Up to that point, no. This was the first time that I was aware that something like this had happened to me. That would later change, but no, this was the first time that something like this had occurred, of which I was aware.
Did you have any family members that would see something? Did you ever get an idea that maybe they knew something was happening?
No, I am married. I am older. And my wife and I sleep in different bedrooms, separate bedrooms. So I was alone in my room when this occurred. There would have been no other person, unless somebody outside of the house would have seen this thing. And that's something I think is very odd about this also. Because this structure was so enormous, you would think that someone else would have noticed this, although this was in the very early morning hours of March 1st of 2011. And at that time of the morning, I doubt that there are very many people awake and looking at the sky. So I can kind of understand that it wouldn't be seen. But just the magnitude of this structure and the illumination from the lights on the underside, it just seems to me that it would have been hard, even for someone quite distant from where this thing was, to miss it. But there was no one else in my house that would have seen it, no.
And when you were a child, I think you say that there were lots of house moves, and a number of them were for your father because he was stationed at different places. But then there were a lot of other house moves. Do you think that was odd, that there was a reason they were moving house?
By the time I was 23 years old, my family had moved 21 times. Of those 21, I'm going to make a guess here. I don't have the actual number written down, but of those 21 moves, I am going to guess that 6 of them were required because my father was in the military when I was quite young. And that would have been as the result of a military transfer. So the vast majority of those 21 moves in my first 23 years would have been relocations that were made by choice. And as a child, it seemed just a normal part of growing up to me. I never questioned it, I don't think. It just was something that we did. And it wasn't until I became an adult, and I don't know, probably in my 30s, I was thinking about that one day, and it just seemed very odd to me. So I remembered all of the addresses where we lived. So I wrote them all down and came up with the number of 21 in the first 23 years of my life. At age 23, I actually moved out to be on my own. So 21 and 23 years. As an adult, looking back on that, yes, it seemed incredibly odd. But as a child, it was just part of life, and I never questioned it.
You know, it's just that thought that maybe your parents were trying to get away from something and they were seeing stuff happen at night and the moves were, you know, an attempt at escape from something. But it's just guessing, isn't it, again?
Well, and I agree with that guess because almost all of the moves were not long distance moves. I mean, we lived in a house in a tract of homes for about a year, and all of these moves, we lived at each one of these residences for about a year apiece. We really never had a long-term place to live. But we lived in one house in a tract of homes for about a year and then moved about a quarter of a mile away in the same tract of homes and lived in that second house for about a year and then moved across the street and down one house and lived in that house for about a year. So we really were never leaving the general area. We were just constantly on the move. It was just a very odd, looking back on it, just a very odd pattern of life. My father died quite young, and he would be the one that would have the answers for me. I did ask my mother many years ago when she was still alive. After I had written that list of addresses down and thought it was so odd that we had moved virtually every year, I asked her one day when I was visiting her why we had moved so much. And she got a perplexed look on her face and said, "You know, Joe, I just don't know." That was an answer that I would not accept. And I told her, "No, that's just silly. You were one of two adults in the house at the time that was making these decisions. Why did we move so much?" And she said, "I really don't know." So that is also, I think, an oddity about that whole period of life.
I just wanted to mention Steve Neal's YouTube channel where you're a guest. I think it's on 3 of the videos. He's put together these depictions, this video of your experiences. And I think they're really well done and they're really worth checking out.
Yes, I was contacted by Mr. Neal about a month and a half ago. He does a series, it's called Breaking the Silence. He is an experiencer, someone who has had UFO sightings or fairly close contact in his lifetime. And he thought it was important to try to attract people that had had experiences and make this more publicly acceptable by spotlighting individual encounters. And he asked if I would come up to his studio and allow him to film me, which I did. My encounters were long enough. There were actually, he broke it into four segments, but it's called Breaking the Silence. You can view all four of those on YouTube by searching that title.
So could we talk about the incident that happened in July when you woke up in bed and the sheets, the covers over you were in this weird shape? And I think you kind of say that it was so weird you couldn't have put the bedclothes into that shape if you'd wanted to, because it was like they were stretched in some weird way.
Yes. In 2011, I had two primary encounters. The first was the March 1st, which we have just discussed. And I had a second one about 4.5 months later on July 11th, 2011. And that one was even more spectacular than the initial one in March. I had gone to bed at a normal hour on that particular evening and fell asleep easily. And I was awakened by an odd noise. It was a low-toned hop. And I immediately opened my eyes because it was quite loud. And I was lying on my back, legs extended, feet together, with my arms straight down at my sides, with my palms against my upper thighs, as if I was standing at attention, lying down. It was a very odd position. And I was in a pyramid. The pyramid was comprised of all of the sheets and blankets on my bed. And when I awakened, I was obviously confused at what I was looking at. I was looking straight up, and the bottoms of the pyramid, they were against my right, the top of my right and left shoulder. And then the sides ascended to probably a little more than 3 feet tall. And the sides were absolutely straight, as if they were solid. The edge of the covers that faced the head of the bed, they were absolutely flat, as if they were pushed up against a sheet of glass. I mean, it was just a precision edge, but it was all comprised of the comforter and sheets and blankets on my bed. And I was confused when I awakened to this. So I stared at it for quite a long period of time, looking right and left and kind of studying this whole thing because I was just so confused. Looking straight up at the ceiling, the entire room was lit in this deep blue glow. And there were lines of blue light that were intertwining and undulating across the ceiling and down the walls, illuminating the room in this absolutely stunning, beautiful cobalt blue color. And eventually, I recognized that the source of the light was near the foot of the bed, and it was obscured from my view by this triangular structure in which I found myself. So I very slowly brought my hands up from my sides and reached up and grabbed low on each side of this pyramid. And I gently pulled down, thinking that this entire structure would collapse. And it did not. The part that I grabbed collapsed into my fists, into my grip, just as normal cloth would. But as I started to pull down, that was the only part of the structure that was disturbed, the part that was in my hand. The rest of it remained fixed in this triangular shape, as if it was solid. I recognized that if I let go of the part that was in my hand, it was going to remain suspended. And I had the realization that this entire structure is at that moment defying gravity.
How did you find a way to look over it to see what was happening on the other side of the room?
I had grabbed low and pulled down. Enough of the structure remained above me that I still could not see where I thought the source of this light was, down at the foot of the bed. So I let go of the part I had just disturbed. I reached up again, much higher, and grabbed a second time and pulled down. And as I was pulling down, again, it remained solid, or it remained in this pyramidal shape, but it did come down. And as it was slowly descending, as I pulled, I started to sit up. And at some point, it got low enough and my head got high enough that I could now see what was before me near the base of the bed.
So there was some type of ET, I suppose we could call it. And it seemed to be, to me, like it was operating some kind of apparatus.
There was a creature standing at the foot of the bed, directly at my feet. It was very big. It was over 6 feet tall. It had a head that was at least twice the size of a normal adult human head. And it was spread very broad in the rear and rolled under. It was wearing a cape, a dark cape. I'll just call it black, cinched right at the chin of this thing. And then it hung, it splayed significantly. It was, of course, cinched at the chin, so it was quite narrow there, but it splayed as it hung to below my bed. And the part that I could see before it disappeared below my bed, it was at that point, oh boy, maybe 3.5 feet broad. So however this thing, this creature was shaped, the top of it was quite narrow and the lower portion had to be quite broad. This thing had, it was looking slightly to its right as I set my eyes on it. I could see how far the back of the head cantilevered over the back of its neck. It was quite dramatic. And just above the collar of the cape, on the back of its neck, it had appendages sticking out of the back of its neck. They looked like an adult human's index finger. There were two or three of these things sticking out of the back of its neck, one just above the next. And then interspersed with those large appendages coming out of the back of its neck, there were all of these long, about 10 inches or 12 inches long, what I call quills. There were scores of these things, and they were somewhat stiff. They kind of stuck out straight. They just sagged a little bit at the very tip. They also appeared to be dark. I call it, this whole set of structures, a mix of adult human fingers and porcupine quills. And just above those, there was this big wad of stuff stuck to the back of its head, about the size of a clenched human fist, adult human fist. And it just was a wad. It didn't really have any formal shape. It was just a big wad of stuff. And then above that, as the head sloped backwards to the underside of this large flattened crest that was on the top of its head, there was this very large field of what appeared to be very large scales. I refer to it as a field of fingernails. They were quite large. And they kind of spread out from side to side as they went up on the inferior surface of this crest portion of the head.
And did it react to you when you pulled the blankets down? You were obviously awake then, or did it just kind of ignore that and get on with what it was doing?
No, it reacted. I don't know if it saw me or if it just sensed that I moved. But once I got the pyramid out of the way and my head was now raised, it immediately, almost immediately, lit blue. Because the head was the only part of it that I could actually see. The rest of it was covered with the cape. The head illuminated just a beautiful blue. It stayed on for a second or two and went, I say, I'm going to use the word dark. It never was dark, but it illuminated, went dark. It illuminated again and went dark. It did that a third time, went dark, and then it pulsed twice, and then it remained dark. Now, it never was dark. When I initially caught sight of it, it had this very light white glow to it. And after it pulsed blue twice, it remained with that dim white glow. And it then turned its head from looking toward its right and looked directly at me. And that was the only time I saw it move.
And so was it operating some kind of device?
I don't know what was happening. I can only describe what I saw. When I first sat up and could see, and the creature was standing there, beyond the creature, the far wall of my room, where that wall meets the ceiling, about a foot and a half out from that wall and about a foot down, so there was this kind of boxed-in area, a foot down and then going back about a foot and a half, that ran across the whole juncture of where that wall met the ceiling. That boxed area looked like water was suspended from that small part of the ceiling. It spanned the width of my room. The face of it, it hung down about a foot. And the face of it that faced me was this beautiful deep blue. The face of it that was on the underside that faced the floor, that looked exactly like the surface. If you can imagine a swimming pool and you stick your hand in the water during a sunny day and you agitate the surface of the water, all of the shadows that undulate across the bottom of a swimming pool. That's exactly what the bottom surface looked like. It was just this undulating, rippling water effect. It was just magnificent. The side that faced me, the deep blue side, was transparent, just like really beautiful blue water. And I could see up into it. And I could see that where the ceiling should be meeting the wall, that part of the room was gone. I could actually see up where the ceiling and roof should be, and they were gone. It was just this blue medium up where those parts of the structure should be.
And was it that you saw lots of symbols almost on a screen in that was taking up the whole width of the room, and they were going down this weird screen thing? It's hard to describe, isn't it? It's like some kind of energetic screen across the room.
Yes. Eventually, now my head is raised and the creature has turned its head and is looking at me, and some things happen. And eventually that structure up at the ceiling, that seems to go away. And at some point, it comes back. But when it comes back, it is not just that 18 inches by 1 foot of the far end of the room. When it returns, it is now occupying about half of the room. It is all the way to the foot of my bed. At that edge of that water-like medium, hanging from that near edge at the foot of my bed, is what appears to be a glass panel. It hangs from the ceiling all the way to the floor and from wall to wall, side to side in my room. So it looks like an enormous glass panel. The creature is still at the foot of my bed, just beyond that glass, what looks like a glass panel. And then above it, the creature is now that water-like medium. So it looks now like about half of my room looking up through that water-like medium. It's a tunnel. There's a tunnel that I can see. That whole water-like surface caps this tunnel at the bottom, but I can see up into it as if I'm looking through very clear water. And it's just this large rectangular tunnel above the creature. And because the near edge from which this glass panel or glass-looking panel is hanging, because that edge is so close to me now, I can actually see up into this tunnel much further than I could see before. And it is just this beautiful blue tunnel. It looks like it's comprised of blue light. It's rectangular. It runs exactly vertical above the creature. And I can see up into it maybe, I don't know, 6 feet or so.
And I think you say that the memory of this event is disjointed. So do you mean it's almost like there were periods of it where you were unconscious and then you'd come back and see something, then unconscious again?
Yes. The experience has big gaps in it. And everything that I wrote down is what I was seeing and what I was feeling. But it is not, there's no real continuity. There are gaps. Once that panel formed at the foot of my bed, thousands of symbols started coursing down and across it, starting from my left, the upper left corner, and coming down slowly and moving to my right as they descended. Then they would just disappear into the wall to my right. The border of the panel at the ceiling appeared, it looked very much like a neon light tube, and it was lit blue. The border of the panel to my left looked like a neon light tube, but it was lit red. And those tubular-looking structures were covered with tens of thousands of short black bristles, all coming out of what appeared to be a tube at different angles, very chaotic-looking, but just covering these things with thousands and thousands of these short black bristles. These symbols coursed down and off to the right, and a couple of symbols came through that appeared, I say they appear to be recognizable, but they caught my attention. I don't know if that was by design. I think it was. But these two tube symbols came down through all of these other symbols, and they seemed to be on a loop. They kept coming back through the panel. After they disappeared into the right side wall, they would then appear up in the left corner again and start coming down with all of these other symbols. There are several symbols that I remembered, but for some reason, these two imprinted in my mind as being very important. There, again, I watched this for quite a long period of time, but then there are gaps. Some other things were happening. And you're right, I describe what was happening as disjointed because some things that I remember seeming to be either at the beginning or at the ending of this encounter, I actually documented them in a different sequence. So I don't know if my memory of the sequence was just off or if some things just seem to have more importance. I really don't know why there are these gaps, and there's really not, a really good continuity to how this thing flows.
And you had a glimpse where you said you saw your legs flailing violently, and it was almost like you were fighting somehow, trying to stop your something happen to yourself.
Yes, that's exactly right. At some point, I believe the large transparent panel in the room is gone. I didn't see it form, nor did I see it disappear, but it was gone. And the creature, there were some different things happening with the creature. And then the panel reappeared. Now, I am doubtful that that panel disappeared and reappeared. I just think that there is a gap in my memory. I think that panel was always there, but in my memory, it was gone for a period of time, and then it reappeared. What I believe was the end of the encounter had regained sensation. During most of this encounter, I had no sensation that I recall. I felt no fear. My only realization was how magnificent this all was. And I got to watch from literally 5 feet away. That was really all that was happening in my head. I was just in amazement. But at some point, I regained sensation. And when that happened, I remember feeling that my feet were very near the transparent panel at the foot of my bed, and I was afraid. This was the first time I had fear. I was afraid that they were going to touch the panel and something bad was going to happen. So I tried to move my feet closer toward me, and I could not move. That frightened me also, and I tried to move them again, and I could not move them. And then my next realization is my feet and legs are above me, straight up above me, and I am frantically kicking, wildly kicking, very violently. But my head and my arms and my torso are not responding. It seems to me that I am being held down and I am kicking to try to free myself, because I am sensing that I am being held and something bad is going to happen.
Well, it's been fascinating talking to you. The book's called Into the Blue: of Wanderers, Invisible Children, and Astral Voyagers, and people can get that on Amazon, can't they?
Amazon in either the ebook format or the printed format.
And I did want to talk to you about the incident on Sierra Highway, but we've run out of time, and I think people should buy the book to find out what happened there. And again, thanks a lot for coming on the podcast.
Thank you so much for providing this platform, Simon.
That was an interview with Joseph Stillwell about his book, Into the Blue: of Wanderers, Invisible Children, and Astral Voyagers. And a great way to support the podcast is to sign up to Patreon, where you get exclusive access to the extended version of this episode. Just go to patreon.com/alienufopodcast. When you sign up, you get access to the episodes in the back catalogue, and they are ad-free and are released 2 days before the free versions. And if you want to try out the extended episodes, you can now get a 7-day free trial. There are two tiers. In the $3 a month tier, you get an extended episode every month, and in the $6 a month tier, you get an extended episode every week. And please check out my other podcast. It's called Our Paranormal Afterlife, and there are over 300 episodes. My website is pastlifeshypnosis.co.uk, and the links are in the show notes. In my work as a clinical hypnotherapist, I take people through past life regression. I'm offering a free consultation call which can be booked on my website. And if you enjoy this podcast, please leave a review, and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening. And do you feel that things are still happening or that it's all stopped now?
Everything stopped. Well, the 2011 encounters, those are the last encounters where I have.